see you later. Good
afternoon. My name is Tommy T. I'm an alcoholic. And I've been asked to speak a little bit on steps 1, 2, and 3. So when I think of that, I kind of think of our problem, our solution, and our decision. Right? I mean, in a nutshell, it's the whole bit. My sober date is April 8th, 1995. My home group is the Decker Avenue Step Group on Staten Island, New York. We're a small little 12 and 12 group. And I couldn't have a better home group. I've been there for 26 of my 28 years here. And I'm just grateful to all the folks in Alcoholics Anonymous who showed me what my first step was, because it took me a while. It took me about 37 years to get a first step firmly in place. So there was a lot of struggles there. And basically because I didn't know what I suffered from, you know, as a lot of us do. I thought my problem was that I drank too much, and therefore I had all those consequences that come with it. You know, staying in those prisons that are out on speaker designs and things like that, you know, it gets a little tough dealing with that. But you kind of like, I loved an analogy I heard one time of our first step, thinking that way, that my problem is that I drink too much. If I could just stop drinking, I'll get better. You're kind of like a well-trained professional boxer. The problem is alcoholism is the MMA. It's the octagon. So you go in there putting your dukes up like this, and you're getting hit with leg kicks and arm bars, and you get choked out, and you don't know what's going on. Because I was 18 months in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, attending meetings, going to an intensive outpatient program and a treatment against street crime and all this good stuff they had me involved in. And all I know is I felt great when I was with you folks, and I felt great even in the diner afterwards, but I was out of my mind for those other 22 hours during the day, and I didn't know what was wrong with me. And if you drink like I drink and think like I think, how many times did we say, what is wrong with me? Not only when I'm drinking, now I'm talking about 18 months trying what I thought was Alcoholics Anonymous. Because on Staten Island at that point, the big thing was meeting makers make it. Make more meetings. Did you go to a meeting today? And I did. It just didn't help me that much. I heard a lot of great things. I just couldn't put them into practice in my life in any way, shape, or form. So it was hard. It was hard. I didn't realize, and it was a relief to me. I think my first step experience with the sponsor that finally grabbed a hold of me was so miraculous. Because although I had read the literature, I'd read the big book to try to fall asleep those first 18 months because I wasn't sleeping well, and I'd fall asleep, read the literature. Nobody ever died from insomnia, right? And I would read it, but I couldn't even tell you our 12 steps were in the book. You'd think it would give you a little bit. Now you were at step 3. Like, you'd think that would be a little bit of a hint. I just glanced over it. It was just literature. It wasn't a transformational, divinely inspired program for me to follow. I didn't get that. But when a little bald-headed bookie from Brooklyn, George, read it to me, that book came alive. He brought that book alive for me. And when he told me that I suffered from an allergy to alcohol and that I got a phenomenon of craving, and the way that Bill was divinely inspired and those that wrote this book, they took those little loopholes that I thought I had when he said, you know, we always develop that phenomenon of craving. I said, well, you know, I can remember some times where I was able to pull myself off the bar stool and take care of business. He said, keep reading. It never occurs in the average temperate drinker. Damn. You know, another loophole closed, you know. And he would bring it. But he also did something with me where he put my name in the book. Does Tom a drink essentially because he likes the effects produced by alcohol? Well, yeah. I didn't like the taste of alcohol when I started drinking, but I love that effect. You know, I even suffered the consequences because of that effect. It was a good trade-off for me. I did not mind that because it was the only thing that I found in all those years that shut my mind down for a while. It was almost like my world went from black and white to color, like in The Wizard of Oz. You know, we find that golden path in the poppy fields, hey, you know, And that's what alcohol did for me. It did what I couldn't do for myself. It's really a tough way to go through life at that point, 37 years old, 18 months removed from alcohol and all other substances, built up because I was going to the gym, you know, 5 days a week, had to look good on the outside, and just dying on the inside and not knowing why. So when he went into the mental obsession, I loved the analogy of the hand on the stove. I've done a lot of crazy things in my life, more than once, because I always think if it's worth overdoing, it's worth overdoing more than once, right? But I've never put my hand in a fire twice. But isn't it the same thing, knowing the consequences and the feelings we're going to have that next day when our minds race uncontrollably? And back then, there'll be some people here that remember the little cassette tapes that went in the answering machines when they were a new thing. I would just take them out and throw them in the garbage because I just blew off a whole bunch of family things and a whole bunch of things I was going to do. I'm not listening to those 27 messages. That next day after, oh, I did it again. And then what? I will never do that again. Only to about 5 or 6 days later, well, wasn't that bad. I'll do it differently this time. But that's not over a year or two for me. That's over 23 years of doing that. And just never getting better. Never getting better. Never controlling my drinking. I cannot control and enjoy my drinking. If I'm enjoying my drinking, you can bet I'm not controlling it. You know? And if I'm controlling it, I'm miserable. If I'm trying to count drinks or do any of that stuff, I am just miserable. I would rather white-knuckle it and not drink. And, you know, that's what kind of that 18 months was for me. If you would have asked me, hey, Tom, what are you doing this weekend? I'm not drinking. That was an activity for me. Like, I'm not drinking. I'm going to some meetings, you know. But that's not how God wants us to live, you know. But then he talked to me about the spiritual malady, and now 37 years old, like I said, going to the gym a lot. I was a pretty good fighter at that point. Not a broken down old man like you see now. But it was scary to me because he explained all those feelings that I've gone through my whole life of not being good enough, not being loved, always in doubt. You know, my mind races like crazy and I never spiral upwards. It's never a good thought. I'm right to the tubes real quick. Jason, last night you told a lot of my early story there with, like, just wanting somebody to love me. But then being resentful at the one person that loved me because I didn't know how to handle that either. I felt like you all got a script to this world and I didn't have it. And I just kept trying to act like I did. That mental or that spiritual malady that I had, followed by that obsession, that mental obsession that would take me back to drinking over and over, had me like a hamster on the wheel, and the wheel was not good, and my life was not good, and everybody around me suffered because of my choices or bad choices or even lack of choices. I don't have the power, control, or choice to drink. And then when you tell a guy like me, we have a solution for you, and you mention the word God, no. No. I was impressed upon me by a very religious grandmother who really was my savior growing up about the Catholic God, the Christian God. And I'm not bashing anybody's God. It was just how I thought at that point in a very sick, untreated mind. But she would say things to me, Tommy, stop running. God's going to punish you. And I'd look at her to listen to her. I'd trip. I'd fall. I'd scrape my knee. And like, ooh, this God thing is rough. Like, I thought God punished me, you know. And it was a tough thing to try to do it. But one thing that I knew, and remember, like, my first step was George's 12th step, right? It was another man's 12th step that brought me to this. And when I went into step two, after spending 51 pages, probably about, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks, twice a week with George, reviewing my behavior over all these years, it's not that first, second step question when asked, do you now believe or are you willing to believe in a power greater than yourself? I couldn't give you an emphatic answer at that part, a definitive answer at that part. But what I could tell you is I was definitely sure that my way wasn't working. So possibly, maybe, outside chance, there might be a power greater than myself. I'm hoping for it because my power is not sufficient. And my life is miserable. And like I said, I'm hurting everybody that loves me. I'm letting down everybody that cares for me. I'm making a real heavy going of life, as the book tells us. And, you know, so George was very corny, and he had just gone through the 12 steps. I was the first guy he took through. And he was like, you know, I have a really big God. You can bury, you can borrow him. And I'm like, yeah, right, you know, whatever, George. You know, he says, he'll take on another lunatic like you. He's got time, you know. But I noticed something about George. He was inwardly reorganized, as our book tells us. There was something about him that was different than the other guys that I was attending meetings to, and that I love. And I love to this day. These guys are still sober. I just don't think they suffer from alcoholism to the depths that I do. I don't think their minds race to the extent that mine do, that it makes me not do things I should do, doesn't give me the power to do the things I'm supposed to do, to be the man that God wants me to be. So we spent a lot of time in step two. And that for me was, you know, we the agnostics. And there was so many things in there that I am like the worst big book quoter in the world. I've read it hundreds of times over the last 25 years, and I butcher every quote, so I don't try to do it often. But there was a paragraph there that I read on my own, and it talks about Christ, and it talks about the tidings of Christ and everything that he does, but we couldn't follow it too well. And I just wrote, "This is me," with an arrow on it, because organized religion and the Bible that I've read, and I even read a recovery Bible in early recovery, it just seemed so aspirational, that the bar was set so high that, and this is how my alcoholism works, right? Why bother try? Why bother try? I'm never going to live up to that. George brought that down to me. He discussed spirituality versus religion. And with all the corny sayings that comes along with that, I won't start reeling them off, but, you know, for those who've gone to hell and come back and all that stuff. But it really made sense to me. It really made sense to me. And I said, I'm willing. I just don't know what to do. He says, don't get ahead of yourself. We're in step two. Don't get ahead of yourself. Like, I was always one step ahead in my step work. I don't know if that's been people's experience here. Like, if I'm writing eight, I'm thinking about nine. Like, I can't write that down, you know, or whatever. Or in four, and I'm not telling them that. I'm not writing it down in four because it's five. And I was the same way in step two. So we get to that second question that says, are you now ready to believe, that God is everything or God is nothing, what's your choice to be? I said, he better be everything, because I really feel like nothing. Because now I had a firm belief and understanding of my first step. I had nowhere else to go but to God. So in the 12 and 12, when it tells us that the first step is the only one we have to do 100%. Now, people that might not be having an experience with the 12 steps or anything will take that as saying, I only have to do it. Read the book. It only tells me I have to do the first step. No. The meaning behind that is that if we do that and we get a firm understanding of our problem, we will turn to God or a power greater than ourselves, because we have nowhere else to go if you're like me. So I was willing. Now, a second step 27 years later means a whole bunch of other things to me now, right? Oh, God is everything? Oh, I miss that word, everything. It's not just my drinking. Oh, it's my beautiful wife and our relationship. It's my four crazy kids, my three crazy grandkids. It's a career that I wanted to leave years ago, but I'm still working at. You know, it's all those fears that come up. Yeah, God is everything. So, you know, you have that first second step experience, and then that second step, for me, has been all through my recovery. All through my recovery. And whenever my fear comes up, well, let's back it up. My resentments are just fears. That's what I always see when I write my nightly inventory. My resentments are my fears. And what's my fear? Agnosticism. I don't believe God has a plan for me. I think I have to manipulate something. I have to do something to make this better, right? We're taught our whole lives as men, you know, when the going gets tough, we put our shoulder up against it. We lean into it. No, you folks tell me to just say some prayers and go help somebody else, and it always works out. So why, after 28 years here, do I still put my shoulder up against it and push? I don't know. I think that's one of the age-old mysteries here in Alcoholics Anonymous. Time and time again has told me that if I'm practicing a second step and I believe God is everything, my life is wonderful. So why do I got to trip over that now and then and try to take my will back and do things my way? I don't know. I think I'm doing it a little less now than I was 26 years ago. So maybe there's some hope, you know? And when we went into the third step for me, so it was two nights a week I was going to this guy's house. And we were reading things that I didn't really understand. But I believe George knew. And I believe George drank like I drank, thought like I thought, and I trusted him. And it was the first process that I wasn't doing that was mandated. Or that it wasn't for the wife. Or it wasn't for the courts. Or it wasn't for the job. It was because with 18 months sober, I thought I was going to kill myself. Because I had no other answer. So George said, all right, we're reading it. He said, he explained the third step decision to me about, you know, that he was going to be the father and I was going to be the child. And he was going to be the agent, the principal, and I was going to be the agent. And things like this, and I'm still really not getting it. And if I had an experience like me with the third step, I don't know that I understood the third step when we went through it. I understood self-will run riot. I understood trying to manipulate every outcome out there, having to feel a certain way to be okay. I understood how I tried to run the show. That was easy, but I didn't understand the decision there. I think now it's really like, my life's none of my business. It's my job to pray to him for guidance, try to find that guidance, talk to others about that guidance, hold myself accountable, and help others. Now, if you would have told me that 26 and a half years ago, I would have ran out of George's house like my hair was on fire. Give my life to God. No, you know. But meanwhile, he's going to do a better job than any of us are ever going to do. But then he said, do you mind, do you have a problem with praying? And I said, no. I said, I've been taught to pray here. I had to learn, I had to have somebody write the Hail Mary and the Our Father down for me in early recovery because I didn't know any of my childhood prayers. And when I said them, it was like nobody was there. But I continued to say them because that's what the old guys told me in the home group. Just pray. It'll get easier. He hears you whether you think he hears you or not. And that's how my first year and a half of prayer was. But when I knelt down on this tile floor with this bald-headed bookie from Brooklyn and held hands, my hands were clammy and they were shaking. You know, kind of like marriage day, wedding day, clammy, you know. And we said that prayer, and I don't know. I don't know what happened other than the power was there to write an inventory that I swore I'd never write. George said he saw something different in me. I did not feel it. I did not have a white light experience. But I did have the power to go through steps 4 through 9. There was something happened there between steps 1, 2, and 3 with my sponsor that really set the tone and the foundation. And that's really all my job is to talk to about today is the foundation of knowing that. There's one line that's in the third step reading that is actually, and I will not say this tomorrow, I promise, but it's my favorite line in the big book, all right? And we can all have 20 of them, and they change every year as we're reading them, but so we now see that all our problems are of our own making. For a guy like me who played a victim his whole life, to really start to realize that all my problems, all of them, nothing, no exceptions, are of my own making, of my expectations, and my will to think that I know what should be best for even somebody else, even with good intentions. It was such a freeing thing, a freeing thing. So when I look at my third step years later, now, then it was about to go through 4 through 9, continue this process, do something, get close to God so you can recover from alcoholism. That's what was shown to me 26 and a half years ago. Now, it's about working a 12-hour day and coming home to a family. We have our 3 grandkids and a married couple, my wife and I, in about a 1,600-square-foot house since COVID, and it's just crazy. And then there's that sponsee waiting on the steps for you because you're about 2 minutes late coming over the traffic. It's like, say my third step prayer and move on. Let's go. Go to sleep tired that night and wake up again and do it tomorrow. And I have a wonderful life. But about, I'm going to say 5, 7 years ago, I was encouraged by a sponsor to rewrite my third step prayer. And before I pass it on to Megan, who's going to take us through steps 4 through 6, I've always had a problem with the Old English and the language of the Bible. The 1939 language in the Big Book gave me a lot of problems. I sat there with a dictionary. That's the level of intelligence you're dealing with here. But I wrote it, and I wrote it in simple language that I would talk to you in. And I don't use thee and thou. So my third-step prayer nowadays says, God, I offer my life to you, to build with me and to do with you as you will. Relieve me of the excessive concentration I have upon myself, so I may be of maximum service to you and others. Do for me what I cannot do for myself, and together we can show just how amazing life can be. May I remain teachable and open to your grace always. And with that, I will pass on my friend Megan, steps 4, 5, and 6.
Thank you, Tommy. That was great. I'm Megan. I'm an alcoholic.
I'm Megan.
And my sobriety date is August 8th of 2009. And I'm going to do steps 4 through 6. So thank you guys for asking me to be of service. And I love listening to other people share on the steps and just share their stories because I just relate so much. Every time somebody gets up here and says anything, I'm just like, yes, me too. You know, when he's talking about in step one, just not thinking I'm an alcoholic. You know, it took me so long to get that first step because alcohol wasn't my problem. Alcohol was my solution to everything. So I was just doing these steps just as part of the what I got to do to get through Alcoholics Anonymous. I thought that Alcoholics Anonymous was 12 steps that you could do in a set amount of time, like 12 months, and they would give you a certificate, and you would graduate, and you could take that certificate to your probation officer, and they would take the monitor off and send you on your way. So I just kind of went through it the first time, you know? I was done with living the way that I was living, and alcohol had not been working for me anymore. But I wasn't really, I didn't know what it meant to change myself through the process of the steps. And I can tell you that today I am a different person than I was when I walked in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I am not that girl anymore. But it took a long time to get from there to here because the first couple of times probably that I went through the steps with a sponsor, I did the best that I could with where I was at the time and what I was ready to do. So my first couple of inventories were still very angry at the other people, you know, and the book talks about that. That's as far as most of us had ever gone. I'm a terrible Big Book quoter, too. I'm so glad you said that because I, you know, there's people who can quote the Big Book and I cannot. I do, like, there's so much in here that I love and I wish that I could, like, reference it for you because that's the stuff that's in my head, but I can't do that, so I won't try. But I would go through the inventory and it was like I was just kind of missing the point for a long time. You know, I would get to my part, like, okay, here's, you know, what I did. And I want to tell you that the last couple of experiences that I've had with the inventory have been pretty revolutionary for me in my sobriety. But it took a long time to get there, right? And I haven't even been here that long, but I thought going through that step process earlier on in sobriety was that was all there was, you know, and then I started to have these deeper experiences with it each time I went through it. Taking sponsees through it changed it for me, but then I still had work to do myself. So anyway, the last couple of times I've done an inventory, it was explained to me, and this was new information at like 10 years sober, that I don't have a part. And I was like, that is wrong. Like, how can you say that? I don't have a part in my resentments, but I believe it today. I don't have a part in my resentments because I have the whole thing. The whole resentment is mine. There's no my part and your part, and that's what I missed for a really long time. I was still putting their part, you know? I was still focused on what they did to me And okay, I was a little bit wrong, and I can take responsibility for that and go make amends for the little things that I did wrong, but they're more wrong. You know, I've got a co-defendant who is more wrong than me, and I held on to it for a long time. I actually took my husband's inventory one time on paper, wrote out his inventory for him. He's not in here right now. He's doing something else. He would love to hear that. He does know about it. He didn't read it. Anyway, so I don't have a part. The whole inventory is mine. And when I got that, it was like, okay, you know, the whole purpose of this inventory is for me to get down to causes and conditions, why I act the way that I act. Where have I been wrong? Where have I made mistakes? Where am I to blame for these incidents that have caused me so much anger and pain and whatever? So, you know, that was just a new experience with the steps for me. And I don't think that I would have been ready to do that early on. I did what I could when I was ready to do it, and more will be revealed. So, you know, if you're new today, just follow your sponsor's directions. Hopefully their directions are out of the big book. It's all there. And the sponsor that I'm working with now takes me right through the big book, word for word, line by line. And it just, like Tommy said, it just comes alive, you know? So while we're doing that inventory, all the other steps are in it. So I'm here to talk about 4 through 6, and I don't think I'm even going to fill up all the time that I have to talk about it. So talk for a long time, Jason. All the other steps are in it. As I'm going through, I brought my little step notebook. My sponsor has me keep a notebook with all the instructions she gives me. Everything's in the book, but like everything she tells me to do is written in my notebook. So when I'm taking a new girl through it, I've got my sponsor's exact directions. So as I'm going through that inventory, in the resentments, everything for 6 is in 4. Everything for 8 is in 4. It's all there. I don't have to do a whole lot of work when I get to those steps because I've already written it out. I've just got to go review it and pray and add to it as it comes. I can't focus enough to look at my own writing. Everything that she's had me do is prayer-led. She always tells me to say a prayer and then put pen to paper. I don't ever put pen to paper without asking God to get involved first. And again, that would have been a hard thing to do. The steps are in order for a reason, right? I had a big problem with God when I got here. I was raised pretty religious. My dad used to be involved in the ministry. My grandfather is still a preacher today. And I had big problems with that. I didn't like their language. I didn't like their customs. I didn't like all of that. And I thought that the God that was mentioned in Alcoholics Anonymous was just that. And I also thought it was blasphemy to call it anything else. Like, I didn't agree with that, but it was also wrong for it to not be that, you know? And I didn't feel okay about it. So I just disregarded God entirely for a long time. I'm really, really glad that changed. And the work that is done in 1 through 3 prepares me for the work that I need to do in 4. Because if I'm not there, if I'm not willing to believe that something can help me change, I'm not going to write what I need to write. I'm going to leave stuff out, you know? So she always has me pray before I put pen to paper, and I do the same thing for the girls that I sponsor. You pray and then put pen to paper, and there are specific prayers for each part of it. I don't know where they come from. They come from my sponsor, you know? So, God, please reveal the truth about what is blocking me from you. Who or what am I angry with? And then write. And each part of the 4-step that we get to, we write. And we pray and we write. So once I got through all of those resentments, All of the fears are in that column three. So there's who I'm angry with, why I'm angry with them, what part of self has been affected. And fear is bracketed next to all of those. And I was taught to name those fears. And so then whenever I get to the fear inventory, I've got all those fears already written out in association with those resentments. And then there's a prayer. Are there any other fears that come up that aren't associated with those resentments? And add those to the list. You know, it's really simple, but I thought it was so complicated. I remember the first time a sponsor sat down with me to do a four-step inventory. It was like, oh my gosh, pre-calculus? I don't know, like some kind of something I don't understand. It was like columns and the brackets and look at the book and write, and my brain just wasn't cleared yet. And I was like, how am I gonna do this? I'm not smart enough to do this. But it really is so simple. The directions are very clear. You just need somebody who has done it and understands and can take you through it. So we go do the fear inventory, and it says very clearly in the book, we reviewed our fears. We put them on paper. We asked ourselves why we had them. And that's what we did. We asked ourselves why we had them. And so here's my fear. Why do I have this fear? And I would write why I had it. And then she said, why? And so I would write why. And she said, why? And I would write why. Until I got all the way to the end, the core fear, the core belief. And it's always something like, I'm going to drink. I'm going to end up alone. I'm going to die. There's no God. That's what I'm afraid that I don't believe. I don't have a relationship with God. I'm not going to be okay. And that's what all my fears boil down to, because I'm reliant on self. I just rely on myself at the end of the day, at my very core. I think there's just me. And the fourth step really helped me see, you know, how that manifests in my life, how I affect other people by my selfishness, my self-centeredness, my self-seeking. It's all about me. I think I'm all there is. I'm the only power in my life. So whatever I did in 1 through 3 is just BS, because when I'm looking at myself in black and white on paper, I believe I am the only power in my life. And that was, it was so like shocking to see that, which is just funny, because if I ever took a decent look at myself in my life, it would be very obvious. But until I did that work, we can't see until we can see. And so as soon as I got it down on paper, it was like, wow, I am an asshole. And I'm the only one that didn't know it, you know? Everybody else in my life knew, except for me. So that was great. And at the end of those inventories, so where I write my wrongs and my mistakes, where I'm wrong, at fault, or to blame, how I created this situation or this feeling of resentment, what I did or didn't do, I then write, have I done any harm to this person? Have I done any harm to anyone other than the direct subject of this resentment? List any additional fears and list my character defects, all in association with this resentment. So for each resentment gets all of this extra writing. So then when I go do I didn't mention the sex conduct. The sex inventory. So resentments, fear, sex inventory. And that was the scariest part of it for me. I made some really, really bad decisions out there, and I thought that I needed to list every single one that had anybody I'd ever had any like inkling of romantic connection with in this sex inventory. And so I tried, the first inventory, I tried to like guy that drove the black Mustang that I met in the Taco Bell parking lot. Other guy that I met on MySpace. I didn't even know their names. There was some really bad stuff in there. I made this whole list, and That sponsor said, no. Put that aside. I'm glad you did that list. I'm glad you reviewed that. But put that aside. Pray. Pray and then write. And when I pray, I write and I trust what comes. So it's not necessarily everybody that I have ever engaged in alcoholic behavior with, but whatever comes up. And then we go through the inventory as it's written in the book, and I'm looking for my conduct. I'm looking for the type of person that I am. These patterns and behaviors that just keep coming up in my life over and over again, and I just keep thinking, I've got a bad picker. I just keep picking the wrong kind of guy, you know? I'm a magnet for con artists. I'm a magnet for whatever. But really, it's these patterns, these behaviors of mine. And I keep seeking, water seeks its own level. And I just keep doing it over and over again until I am willing to take a look at myself. So then when I go sit down and do this fifth step with this sponsor, and I've got all this stuff, my hardest fifth step was like 6 or 7 years sober. It was the longest, the most thorough, the most, I couldn't believe what had come up. I've had really, really good teachers in Alcoholics Anonymous, and she was a really good teacher, and she had me really get to the work, and I was ready. And it was very prayer-led, and we sat down, and we did this, and I just cried my heart out and read her everything on the paper, and she was very specific, which is this particular tip has done me more good as a sponsor than anything else. She said, read what you wrote. Don't give me the backstory. Don't give me the drama. Don't give me all the explanation that you think I need. I don't need it. Read what you wrote. And I was like, oh, okay. And that has been very helpful to not have your inventory go on for 6 hours, you know? So, I mean, it takes what it takes. Do what you got to do. But it's a helpful tip. So I read to her what I wrote. And she would stop me as it was appropriate, and we would talk about things that needed to be talked about, and she would share with me as she needed to share with me, especially those really deep, dark ones that I didn't want to say, the ones that really hurt, the ones that were really shameful. And we got through it. And as I was reading, she was writing. And I wanted to know what she was writing, because she is not a therapist, and why is she taking notes on my inventory? Where is she going to put that? So at the end of the fifth step, she hands me a list. And she was very clear to say, this is a list of defects that I heard you name as you read your inventory. Because my sponsor can hear what I can't. She can see what I can't. There's a reason she's my sponsor. I've asked this woman because I trust her to sponsor me and guide me through these 12 steps. So at first I was a little bit offended that she would write down my defects, but she was very clear. These are the ones that I heard you name when you read your inventory aloud. And so she handed me these defects, and I compared them to my inventory, and she was right. It's all there in writing. She didn't add anything to it. And she instructed me to go take that hour that the book talks about and get quiet and review the work that I've done and add anything else that comes up. And there's a very important question. Did we leave anything out? Is there anything that you didn't want to say? Anything you were too scared to write down? Anything you're too ashamed of? You know, now's the time. And if there's nothing that comes up then, if it comes up in that hour, it's okay. Call me then. Let me know. We'll talk about it then. And so, you know, I went into that hour with all the work that I needed to start on the next step. I already had this list of defects to get started, review the inventory, say the prayer, do the writing. And I will say one thing about step six that was really shocking when I got there. I'm shocked by all the steps. I'm like, every bit of the process was like, you have got to be kidding me. I had no idea that that's what this was about. But six particularly, and it says it, I think, in the 12 and 12. If I'm wrong, tell your sponsor. It says, it might be in the big book. I can't quote. I don't know. You tell me after this. Character building. It's character building. And I was like so shocked. I was as shocked by that as I was when I found out this whole thing was about finding God. You've got to be kidding me. Like, this was just a spiritual journey, you know? Like, what? So step six is about character building. If I've got all these character defects, the opposite is character attributes, and we're building character. And I don't have good character. And it, I was like, oh, okay. I mean, it was just surprising to me. I'm pretty delusional, so not anymore, but I was when I got here, and slightly decreasing over the years the more I work these steps. So I don't know how long I've talked. I'm grateful for this process, and I'm grateful to still feel like I'm learning. I hope that I don't ever feel like, you know, I know what Bill knew or whatever, like I've got a direct line to God, because I don't. I need you, and I need what you share about it in meetings every week that I sit in. Every time I flip through this book, I see something new that I didn't notice before, and I hope that it always feels that way for me. So I'm really grateful to be here, and that's all I got, and I'm going to hand it over to Jason, who's going to do 7 through 9.
I'm not supposed to be here till 3:05. It's 2:45. I hope I show up. My name is Jason Johnson. I'm an alcoholic. I didn't read the email. I think we went through that last night. And according to Tommy, I'm not in business attire. But I am retired. And so this is what I wear, right? I'll have a suit coat tonight, so there's a men's there. Was anybody here for this here last night? All right, so I accidentally made a mistake. I had a story about being a bank robber, right? Just got shot to hell, just like that, right? Because I didn't know you could be a beautiful 6-foot blonde and walk in and just give a note and get your money. I thought you had to have a bandana, a gun, and a gang. Right? So that whole story is shock, really. You know what I mean? I got to come up with something better. Thanks. And then you quit early. You're at the top of my list. Look, I'm a 50-yard runner in a 100-yard race, right? I'm the kind of guy that I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. Look, if they had a big book for dummies, that would be me, right? Because I just don't get it, right? And I second-guess everything, and I question everything, and I look for loopholes. My wife says I do the least amount of work for the biggest applause. I'm just that guy, right? And so when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous and came all the way in and sat all the way down and really admitted to my innermost self that I'm an alcoholic, I had to start doing the steps, you know? And for me, I came in step one, you better hope so, you're here. Step two, I had to have that relationship. Step three, I mean, this is when I started asking questions when I got to step three, right? And I have to make up some time, so I'm going to go a little bit through them because some people gave me way too much time than I need. But step three for me, right, when I got in there, it says I had to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. I didn't understand that, right? So I went to my sponsor and said, I don't get it. He goes, oh, it's easy. I said, what is it? He goes, it's your thoughts and your actions. Your will is your thoughts and your life is your actions. I was like, well, why didn't they write that down? Right? That would have been a lot easier. I can get that. I got on my knees and prayed, which I thought was very uncomfortable and very unnecessary and very strange. And I got up and I didn't have that. Ooh, oh, I thought, I hope nobody saw that. Right? But I'm here to tell you today, look. I know I'm not supposed to talk on step three, but this is where it changed for me. My wife was 6 months pregnant, and she called me on the phone and she said, hey, you need to meet me at the hospital or at this clinic. They can't find a heartbeat, right? I didn't know what that meant. I just realized that's not a good sign. So I called my sponsor. I said, what do I do? He says, man, you're not the only scared person here. You need to get on your knees when you get there, pray. And then when you get in there, you just need to stand there and be present for Julie. I said, great, I can do that. You know, there's this guy, Roy, and Every meeting has a Roy, right? He's that guy that can go sideways, like me, at any time. And I sat by Roy at this meeting the night before, and he had a problem with God, and he wasn't going to talk to God, and he had a problem with AA and all this stuff. And so I sat by him, and, you know, it was an interesting night. But the next day, I'm in this car, and I'm thinking about all that, and I'm trying to pray to a God that I believe in. And I get to this clinic, and we found out we lost the baby, right? And we had to go in the next morning and have a procedure. And so we get there really early. It had been snowing in Portland, and if it snows an inch, everybody stays home. And it's kind of scary in there. And we get to this room where you're, like, downstairs because the surgical place wasn't open yet. We're sitting down there, and it's dark, and it's, like, 6:30 in the morning, and I see this guy come going like this in the window. So I'm like,